You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, when's the last time you darned a sock? We talk about a growing passion for sustainable fashion with a Wisconsin professor coming up. Now, the impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump is underway in the Senate today. 100 lawmakers must decide whether Trump should be convicted of inciting the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. He's the first U.S. president to face trial after leaving office. The issue that lawmakers will discuss today or have been discussing today is whether this makes the impeachment constitutional or not. To convict Trump, 17 Republicans would need to join all 50 Democrats in backing it. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, says he knows how that will go.
The outcome is really not in doubt. That doesn't mean what happened on January the 6th was okay. It means this impeachment in the eyes of most Republicans is an unconstitutional exercise.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are you watching for during this impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate? Do you agree with Senator Graham that it's unconstitutional to impeach a former president? Do you want to see the president held accountable in some way for the events of January 6th? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Lily Gorin is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. She's the author of multiple books on political science, including as co-author Mad Men in Politics, Nostalgia, and the Remaking of Modern America. Lily, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me today, Rob.
Well, so far we've had the Democrats present to the House impeachment managers, present their opening arguments, including a fairly chilling video showing the events at the Capitol on January 6th. What I think even the president's supporters have described as a puzzling opening statement from one of his lawyers, a more expected one from the second. What are you making of what you've seen so far?
Well, I mean, again, the both sides, both the House managers and Trump's lawyers, had to some degree previewed some of what they were going to talk about today in the court documents that were filed last week in terms of the arguments that they were going to be making. And so some of this is following directly from those court documents. And in that regard, I'm not necessarily sure that the lawyers are or the managers are making new arguments. They are expanding on them. And of course, they have more time to expand on them in the Senate with the senators present.
To that issue that Senator Graham raised in that clip, the constitutionality, I want to give a listen to lead House impeachment manager, Democratic Representative Jamie Raskin of Maryland, saying you can't give presidents a January exception. Here's a listen.
It's an invitation to the president to take his best shot at anything he may want to do on his way out the door, including using violent means to lock that door, to hang on to the Oval Office at all costs, and to block the peaceful transfer of power. In other words, the January exception is an invitation to our founders' worst nightmare.
So the argument, the January exception, saying that if a president does something bad at the end of their term and you can't impeach them after they leave office, that leaves no real mechanism for accountability. What do you make of that argument, Lily?
I mean, and I think Raskin is really building on arguments that Hamilton absolutely made with regard to the way that the office was structured and the sort of built-in accountability and responsibility of the office itself, that the president can be held accountable to the people, either through elections, right? Or the president can be held accountable to the people through this kind of process, this impeachment process. And so the argument that, you know, there is no time when the president is now not accountable, even if he has lost an election, doesn't really necessarily comply with the argument made at the time of setting up this office in 1787.
One argument has been, why impeach the president? You can't, or former president, you can't remove him from office because he is the former president. There is an additional possible consequence, though, if the president were convicted, he could be barred from running for office again. Can you talk about that part of the impeachment consequences?
Yeah, if it, you know, again, we haven't necessarily seen this with regard to presidential impeachments, but the president, according to the Constitution, can be impeached and can be removed from office following a trial. And so in that removal issue, that also follows on that the president could be disqualified according to the Senate sort of rules from running for or taking another federal seat, be it president, senator, vice president, congress member, and so forth. So there can be other consequences that come, not just in terms of the removal of the person from office, but barring the person from office for the future.
Talking to Lily Gorin, political scientist at Carroll University in Waukesha, looking at the opening day of the Senate impeachment trial, former President Trump's second impeachment trial. Now, Lily, we've been focusing on the constitutional argument so far. Can a former president be impeached in the Senate? There is, of course, then the content of the House Democrats' prosecution here. They showed the video of the horrific events at the Capitol, worse in some ways than it appeared watching it in real time. Then the argument is the president culpable? How do you hold him culpable? The House video trying to make that connection, the president's lawyer saying, yes, it was terrible. No, the president wasn't responsible. What do you make of the arguments we've seen on the content here so far?
Well, and again, this, you know, this goes back to how people were experiencing the events on January 6th, that, you know, if you've heard some of the discussions and explanations of what members and staff members and media people inside the Capitol were sort of understanding what was going on, then you sort of see this growing picture of people sort of saying there's this mob that is here and they're coming inside and I don't know what's going to happen. And so how much was President Trump's speech on the Ellipse that essentially, you know, encouraged people to go demonstrate at the Capitol and to fight? Those were the terms that he used. How much was that part of what ended up being this, you know, sort of violent assault on the physical building and, of course, the loss of life and injury that transpired there? And so there, the House managers are making the argument, because that was also what's embedded in the one article of impeachment, that President Trump is responsible for what happened on January 6th.
Both arguments on both sides have also focused on the future impact. The president's attorneys saying, hey, if you impeach this president, you're opening the door to the frivolous use, in effect, of impeachment in the future. The Democratic House managers, the impeachment managers, saying, if you don't hold this former president accountable, what are you opening the door for future presidents? What do you think about the lessons for posterity either way, Lily?
Well, I mean, I think, again, you know, I was talking to my students about this only this afternoon. You know, in the past, when I would talk about and teach about the impeachment sections of the Constitution, that, you know, and students always say, oh, you know, you can impeach the president and remove the president from office. And I say, well, you know, that doesn't happen very often. And for a long time, it only happened once. And then it was almost a second time with Nixon. And then there was the second time with Clinton. And now within, you know, sort of 30, 40 years, we are now in our third impeachment. And so you have, I don't know if it's a frivolous use of impeachment, but you have more impeachments of presidents now than you have had in the past. And in the past, I would talk about the fact that the impeachment was usually used to remove judges. We had far more judges removed via impeachment than presidents, or at least impeached. And so now we have far more presidents in the last generation who have been impeached or threatened with impeachment, in the case of Nixon, than in the rest of our history combined.
Lily Gorin is with us from Carroll University in Waukesha. We're looking at the opening of the impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been watching the trial? What has stuck out to you so far? What do you want to see come out of all of this? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation. Take your calls coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Lily Gorin, professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University, talking about the impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate of former President Trump, currently underway, actually just wrapped up for the day, I believe, with a Senate vote of 56-44 saying it is constitutional to try a former president. Again, a handful of Republicans went along with that procedural vote, not necessarily an indicator of what will happen in the vote to convict, which would require 67 votes to convict the former president. Well, let's take your calls now at 800-642-1234. Ruby starts us off calling from Fort Atkinson. Ruby, hi.
Hi.
Oh, what do you want to bring up, Ruby?
Apologies. I just think that if President Trump would condone something as violent and nefarious as the attack on the Capitol, why should he ever be allowed to lead the country again? It only shows that he's willing to separate us as a country.
Ruby, thanks for the call. And Lily, that's one of the arguments. Did the president condone the attack? He, even as he was calling for people to leave the Capitol a couple hours into the event, he spoke positively about them, said he loved them, and repeated his ongoing claims that he had actually won the election. How much does the question of whether he condoned the insurrection as it was going on matter in this trial?
I think this is part of the debate, and this is also part of the argument that the House managers are making, that President Trump, even not having been with the individuals who stormed the Capitol, but having gone back to the White House and watching it on TV, that he was sort of satisfied, I guess, that there was a real attempt to disrupt the counting of the Electoral College votes on January 6th.
Thanks a lot for that call. Ruby, we'll go to Dennis now in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi. If Trump is not blocked from re-election, Trump will try for re-election again, will refuse to concede. There will be this whole thing all over again.
Dennis, thanks for the call. Lily, Dennis worried that we could see a similar scene with Donald Trump in the future.
Yeah. And again, this is, I think, one of the reasons why you also saw quite a few Republicans in the House voting for the impeachment, that they saw what happened on January 6th and also what Trump was talking about with regard to the election being fraudulent and stolen, and that was something that they could not support in terms of somebody within their own party. There's an op-ed in today's Washington Post by one of those Republicans who is, you know, sort of explaining why he thinks that the Senate should, in fact, vote to convict Trump on these charges.
And Lily, thanks for that call, Dennis. Can you talk about the political calculations facing some Senate Republicans, not necessarily wanting to condone what happened at the Capitol, not wanting to go back to their constituents and having to explain why they stood up to Donald Trump?
Yeah, I mean, this seems to be also part of the calculation that any number of House members also made. And you've seen, you know, some of the House members who voted for the articles of impeachment being challenged by their home party, you know, their home Republican party. You've seen some of this also in some other states where, like, the Arizona Republican Party has censured any number of Republicans, including the governor in Arizona. And so there is really some of this tension that you're seeing within, on the inside of the Republican Party with regard to elected officials, as well as with regard to the people who are in charge of the party or a lot of the enthusiastic supporters of the party.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Jody is with us in Toma. Jody, hi.
Hi. Just in addition to what somebody said earlier, if Donald Trump isn't responsible, why did he tell his followers that he would be going with them? And then he went back to the White House when our country's under attack, our senators, all of our elected officials are to be taken to a secure location. However, he did not. He sat in the White House and watched TV while senators were calling him, asking him for help. That's not what leaders do. So I don't understand why there's even a question of why he should be impeached. And of course you can be impeached. You're the president until the day that you leave office. That's
Jody,
all I have.
Thanks for the call. And yes, I think a lot of focus, Lily, on the president's actions and inactions over the course of January 6th.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, you know, I was watching it while doing some work, and I was watching it on C-SPAN, so you don't have the comments of the people on TV. And then I suddenly saw them come in and talk to Mike Pence, and suddenly Mike Pence was no longer presiding over the Senate, and then the feed stopped. And I was like, this is very strange. What's going on? And I switched over to some of the cable stations and, you know, sort of got the update. And that's a lot of, you know, what we sort of saw in terms of what was going on in the Capitol, that you had Mike Pence there, you had who's a constitutional officer, you had Nancy Pelosi, who's a constitutional officer, and at the time, Chuck Grassley, a constitutional officer, all of them in the line of succession, and all of them had to be removed by security details to, as the caller said, a secure location because they were being threatened. The argument was being made by some of the people inside the Capitol to hang Mike Pence. And so that, you know, that again is a very real threat to elected officials trying to do their job, which was to count the Electoral College votes.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking about today's impeachment proceedings with Lily Gorin, political scientist at Carroll University. Lily, I just want to take a moment to look back on that day, January 6th, a huge day, a shocking day, really unprecedented in American history. It's just a month later now. I don't know. Has the enormity of it, do you think, faded in the public mind and in the mind of, or at least in the statements of elected officials already?
I mean, I think so. And part of it is, you know, in the interim between the events of January 6th and today, the start of the impeachment trial, we also had a change in government. And so you had the inauguration of Joe Biden. Again, you also have had some of these other, you know, sort of changes that have changed the dialogue a little bit because of Twitter and Facebook's sort of pulling down Donald Trump's accounts. And so there's been a little bit of a different dialogue than had been going on up to that point. But the events of January 6th are ones that, you know, I definitely will not forget. And I know talking to older Americans in particular, they were crying. They were so disturbed to see this kind of assault on our democracy.
Let's go back to our callers now. Tom is with us in Shell Lake. Tom, hi.
Hi. So my question is if there's another mechanism besides impeachment that would potentially bar President Trump from holding future federal office. I know, for example, that if you commit certain federal crimes, one of the penalties is that you can't hold federal office. So I'm wondering if the under the Insurrection Act, if you were to be convicted under the Insurrection Act, if that would bar you from holding federal future federal office. And if so, then why don't we just charge him under the Insurrection Act? Like, for example, if to like get around this whole issue of constitutionality of impeaching a previous president.
Tom, thanks a lot for the call. Interesting questions. Lily, it is difficult to charge a sitting president, for criminal acts, and I think a former president for acts that they did while they were president. Am I about right there?
I think I'm with you on that one. And again, you have to think about the fact that impeachment, as articulated within the Constitution, and particularly with regard to the president, is a, you know, it's a political mechanism to hold an elected official responsible in a particular way, whereas criminal charges are separate and could come separately. But that it again, the sort of what the president does and how he conducts himself as president, a lot of that is protected as the president from criminal charges.
Thanks for that call. In our last minute and a half or so, Lily, big picture, do we have enough mechanisms to hold presidents accountable? Impeachment impeachment conviction has happened zero times for a president. Criminal charges, very hard to file against a president. Do we need something else?
There's a lot of discussion about that, and political scientists and constitutional lawyers and others who have done some work in this area have been sort of writing law review articles. There's a new book by Bob Bauer, who had been in the Obama White House, and Jack Goldsmith, who had been in the W. Bush White House, called After Trump. That's all about different ways of, you know, sort of holding presidents responsible in particular ways that seem to possibly bolster that capacity.
We'll leave it there for now. Lily, thanks for joining us again.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on today.
We've been talking to Lily Gorin, professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. She's the author of multiple books on political science, including as co-author Mad Men and Politics, Nostalgia, and the Remaking of Modern America. We talked to her today about the second impeachment of former President Donald Trump. The trial started today in the U.S. Senate. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Sooner or later, everything old is new again. That's a quote from author Stephen King, but it applies nicely to our relationship with our clothing and how we buy it. Things like mending old clothing and buying used items have become popular, even trendy in recent years. Even during COVID-19, secondhand shopping sites like eBay and Depop have seen a big increase in sales. There's also a growing number of consumers who, when buying new, want to know more from the companies making their clothes, like who made it, where, and under what conditions. All this is often put under the umbrella of sustainable fashion, something that's become a bit of a buzzword. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you try to buy clothing from smaller and or sustainable businesses? Have you made an effort to buy used clothing, vintage or thrifting? And do you repair and mend your clothes to make them last longer? And do you look for durable stuff, maybe more than you used to when you're buying something new? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Sarah Eichhorn is a fiber artist who focuses on sustainability and connecting with nature. She currently teaches at Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design, including most recently a course titled The Anti-Fashion of Fashion. Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me be a part of the conversation.
Yeah, what do you mean by the anti-fashion of fashion?
Yeah, the course that I taught in the fall at MIAD was really focusing on the behind-the-scenes ideas, things that we don't maybe sometimes see in the news within the fashion industry. We talked about things related to the environmental impact of the industry, inclusivity within the industry, and our relationship with our clothing.
I've seen a couple different articles lately, Sarah, in going in exactly the opposite directions. One, some of the things I was just talking about, people interested in durable clothes, worried about the environmental impact, buying used things. But also, even during the pandemic, interest in fast fashion, even more interest in stuff that, you know, is cheap, quick, and doesn't necessarily last that long. Are these both trends you see going on right now?
Definitely. I just read an article in The Atlantic yesterday that talks exactly about that and just how, you know, there's so many different target markets. And so it really kind of just goes back to who is shopping, where are they shopping, and what are they looking for? But also then, you know, trying to educate the public on what's really happening with some of these big companies that are fast fashion.
And then on the flip side, during the pandemic, have you seen people maybe more interested in getting back to basics and learning, I don't know, how to mend those socks? I've tried to darn socks. It didn't go well. But trying to learn how to do those kind of things to make the clothes they have last longer as maybe part of thinking about sustainability?
Absolutely. I think the pandemic has given us quite a bit more time to be at home. And not only that, but just thinking about, you know, we're at home, but we're in front of our screens at home, too. So what can we do to, you know, take a break from the screens and do something with our hands and kind of clear our minds, too? It's almost meditative, you know, when you get into mending and stitching and whatnot. So I could definitely see people going through their closets and, you know, really kind of developing a new relationship with some older pieces of clothing that they might own.
You work with younger people and your students who obviously have an interest in design and fashion, maybe hope to have careers in the industry themselves. What kind of things do you hear them talking about when it comes to sustainability in the industry or lack of same?
These students definitely have their pulse on sustainability, but with like fresh eyes. You know, it's obviously, like you mentioned, it's been a buzzword, you know, within the news for quite some time. But these students really, you know, are taking it all to heart. They're interested in upcycling. They're interested in, you know, shopping secondhand as well. And shopping secondhand doesn't mean thrift stores, like maybe what it might have meant, you know, long ago. Secondhand could be upscale shops online. You know, there's so many different platforms now where you can sell your clothes, you know, just through your phone today as well. So I think they have a fresh perspective on it. And again, are taking it to heart that they want to act on it. They want it to be not just a trend, but something that has some longevity and can lead to some real change.
You mentioned upcycling. That's something we've talked about on the show a time or two over the years. What is it? And can you give us some examples of what it might look like?
Yeah. Upcycling is the idea of taking something that, you know, is old, but turning it into something new or using it for a new purpose. It's great. You know, something like bed sheets that can be dyed a different color or, you know, just printed upon and then become a quilt, or it can be cut up and turned into a shirt, or even lounge clothes for where we're at in today's world with the pandemic. So it's really, it's the idea of taking something old and making it new again, but it also just being, you know, for art purposes or for functional wearable purposes.
We're talking about sustainable fashion, people maybe being more interested in durable clothes. Things are going to last a long time, and mending our clothes, making them last longer. Sarah Eichhorn is with us, a fiber artist, currently teaches at Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your own thoughts, experiences, and maybe secondhand finds. 800-642-1234 is the number. Let's go to a caller now. We've got Jake with us in Appleton. Jake, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Jake?
Just wanted to say, as an avid outdoorsman, I tend to find that vintage wool clothing is a lot more durable and a lot warmer than more modern and conventional clothing that's made of polyester and nylon. So I really seek that stuff out when I'm at resale shops and other places. So I think it's a great idea, and I am totally with the movement for people looking for those and reusing that.
And Jake, I got to ask, is this something you discovered, you know, later on down the road after experiencing the other stuff for a while?
Yeah, I actually had a hand-me-down from a deceased relative, and it turned out fantastic in the field, and now it's my go-to.
Jake, thanks so much for sharing that. So, Sarah, in some cases, they really don't make them like they used to?
Oh, absolutely. And hearing that, just like, I have the biggest smile on my face right now. I have such a affinity for wool, and I love, you know, it's just such a great fiber for so many different purposes, and there's really nothing like it, especially during these cold Wisconsin winters.
Thanks a lot for sharing that, Jake. And that makes me think, Sarah, you know, this is something that somebody wore presumably for years in their life and was able to hand down to somebody else, contrasted with, I mean, my understanding of some of the fast fashion out there is, you know, you might get away with wearing it 5-10 times before it kind of goes to whatever, it kind of becomes unwearable.
absolutely. I mean, you're lucky when you say 5 to 10 times. Most people will throw away up to 75% of the clothing that we wear every year if it falls into that fast fashion category. Because, yeah, it just does not hold up after those initial few washes.
On the durability question, something I've heard, and correct me if this isn't true, that as a guy who wears men's clothing, I benefit from generally having more durable clothes. The stuff I go to the store and buy on average is going to last longer than someone who's wearing clothes designed for women. Is that about right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Men's clothing hasn't really changed very much, you know, over the last century. It's just been, the silhouettes and the fibers that are used have always, there's a standard set there, whereas women's clothing has definitely, branched out more in silhouettes and also using a lot more of synthetic fibers. And so those are some of our biggest pollutants, and those are the ones that don't hold up as long. They don't last as long.
We're talking to Sarah Eichhorn, who teaches at Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design, including most recently a course titled The Anti-Fashion of Fashion. We're talking about sustainability in the clothing industry, and we want to hear your thoughts, your stories, and your questions at 800-642-1234. You're shopping for clothes in a store when you can or online. What matters? What are you looking for? Are you thinking about low price? Are you thinking about high quality, sustainability? What went into making it? Do you shop secondhand? Why? Is it for sustainability, to save some money on cool stuff? And are you someone who mends your clothing, somebody who stitches up that old sweater instead of replacing it? And do you have a favorite secondhand find that you just want to tell us about? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation talking about sustainable fashion, from buying more durable, long-lasting clothes to darning your sweater instead of buying a new one, or buying used one way or another. Sarah Eichhorn is with us. She teaches at the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design. Her most recent course, titled The Anti-Fashion of Fashion. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you try to buy clothing with durability in mind? Do you wonder who made your clothes in the first place and what kind of conditions they were made under? Do you buy secondhand when you can? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Before we go back to our callers, Sarah, you briefly touched on this earlier. I was hoping you could expand on it. The conditions under which clothing are made, the working conditions, the environmental conditions, what kind of concerns do people have about that?
I feel like it was in the 90s when, a lot of the labor of the fast fashion or fashion companies was exposed. And I feel like it's become slightly desensitized over time. But the reality is it still exists. We still have labor concerns and issues and things that need to be paid attention to with these larger companies and how our clothes are made. And really, when it comes down to, say, part of the sustainable umbrella, labor's underneath there. And there's research that needs to be done. And a lot of these companies need to be held accountable for their labor practices.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Kathy is with us in Milwaukee. Kathy, hello.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that I made my first clothing purchase in a year last week. And sadly, it was for sweatpants because I desperately need more. I've been wearing the few pair I have out. And I've been thinking a lot about clothing lately, and seriously, I'm dreaming about it too, because I really miss colorful fashion. And I wasn't a very super adventurous, fashionable person before, but I have a big urge to change my style when COVID is over and I'm out in the public and meeting people. I want to dress a lot more colorfully. For me, of course, I love resale because there's so much more variety when you go to resale shops. It's just more, there's so few department stores left anymore and not a lot of variety. So that's my go-to, is resale shops and things. But I'm going to be changing my sense of fashion when this COVID isolation ends.
Wow, how interesting, Kathy. Thank you so much for sharing that. Sarah, I'm going to guess that Kathy's probably not alone. We're going to have this floodgate opened post-COVID of people maybe shopping and dressing in a different way.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we know that this has all impacted us in a variety of ways. And for some of us, our bodies have changed, so our wardrobes might change. But I think there will be, you know, an urgency for color and vibrant things to bring happiness back to us as well. So
thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Amber now in Hobart. Amber, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Amber?
I was actually really loving this segment. I'm a practicing zero waster, so I do my best to produce as little trash or impact on the environment as I can. So I've actually been repairing my clothes or buying secondhand for the past couple of years. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, Amber, did you grow up like knowing how to knit or sew or darn socks? Or is this something you've learned as part of this zero trash effort?
I'm actually a fiber artist, so okay. I've always known how to sew. This is the first time I've put it to such a mundane use, but I'm loving it.
Interesting. Amber, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Sarah, a fellow fiber artist there. Have you heard anecdotally, at least, Sarah, that more people are interested in stitching up that piece of clothing instead of either getting rid of it or demoting it to weekend wear only?
Absolutely. And I think, yeah, it goes back to the relationship with our clothing, and that there is no shame in repairing our clothes. We don't need to feel ashamed for, you know, wearing the same jeans for 20 years, in that there's a bunch of patchwork on there. It can really be approached, the idea of mending can be approached as art, really, because there's so many different stitch patterns and thread colors and patches and things like that that you can use to repair your clothing, that it really can turn the piece into a one-of-a-kind piece with a lot of memories and history to it as well.
Thanks a lot for that call. We had a conversation on the show, it's been a few months, Sarah, about sewing machines being sold out and repair shops having huge backlogs as people, you know, they had more time, they couldn't leave the house so much, so they're gonna try repairing or even making clothing more. Do you see that interest from where you're standing?
Yes, definitely. And again, I think that goes back to the need of doing something with our hands, kind of clearing our heads. Developing that relationship with something we made, and the knowing that we made it ourselves and was part of the entire process. I think that's very important. And there's a, you know, pride that goes into that.
We're talking to Sarah Eichhorn, fiber artist, instructor at the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design, looking at interest in sustainable clothing and all that that means, getting more durable stuff, getting secondhand stuff that's still in good shape, fixing our clothes and more. Taking your stories and calls at 800-642-1234. Lori joins us next in Duluth. Lori, hello.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
I sure can. What's your story, Lori? Oop, accidental rhyme there. Sorry.
My story is that I found a secondhand wedding dress from, at the time it was called Bridals by Bethany. Right now it's just West Duluth Sewing. But originally it would have been a $1,500 dress I got for $500.
Awesome. Is that over the last year, Lori, or is this in the distant past?
Just over a year ago, we had a COVID wedding. We got married on September 20th, 2020. That was our date.
All right. Well, congratulations. Happy almost half anniversary. I guess that's coming up. Wow. Buying wedding dresses secondhand, Sarah.
I think that's fantastic. I really think that we overlook some of those opportunities when it comes to very traditional things in our lives, events in our lives, where we're supposed to be, you know, buying something brand new. And so that's fantastic to really rethink the wedding dress. I think it's something that we should really reexamine for a lot of aspects in our lives when it comes to traditional garments, and knowing that they probably already exist out there. And even if they're secondhand, does that really impact the function of the garment and the meaning of the garment? So that's great.
Thanks a lot for that call, Lori. That makes me think, though, Sarah, when people are designing clothes, do they think about that sort of timelessness and their lasting power? Because I think, is there a big market, I don't know, for like 80s prom dresses, which were very much of the time and horrible?
Well, we know fashion's cyclical, so they'll probably make a resurgence at some point or another. And it really, you know, it's funny, like we have these trends today, but at the same time, there's so many trends and things move so quickly within the fashion industry that I feel like more individual style is what dominates the industry as well. And that so many people can just pull these, you know, what would be vintage garments, even our 80s prom dresses can probably count as vintage at this point. And wear them today, make them their own and not in a way that we would, you know, kind of question it.
Thanks for that call, Lori. Andrew joins us next in Janesville. Andrew, hi.
Hi. Yeah. One thing we do is we take worn out clothing and cut it into strips. And my wife really, she then puts it on a loom and we make rugs out of it. And, you know, especially stuff that you can't even take to the thrift store. It's been a nice way to just deal with stuff that's no longer usable.
And Andrew, do you use the rugs personally? Do you give them as gifts? Where do they all end up?
Yeah, she's given away some as gifts, but yeah, we use quite a few of them in our house. We have hardwood floors, so we have plenty of places to put them.
Fantastic, Andrew. Thanks for sharing that. So, Sarah, that sounds like an example of that upcycling you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, and I personally have a pile of old denim jeans that I plan to do just that, is to weave them into rugs. So that's great that, you know, that they're doing that.
And Andrew mentioned something there, clothes that, you know, the thrift store doesn't necessarily want. And my understanding, Sarah, is that a lot of used clothes, the thrift store ends up not being able to sell it, right?
Yeah. So that's kind of a behind the scenes thing in that so many, you know, donation places, there's so much clothing already out there that the donation places just can't accept all of it. Many of the clothes that aren't maybe of a brand name, a recognizable brand name, will get either tossed in the landfill or shipped to another country. And so there's a lot of things, especially T-shirts that, you know, if you think you're doing the right thing by bringing it to the thrift store, it probably isn't going to make it in the thrift store to be on the sales floor. So that's really, I think, you know, one thing when you think about sustainability and the fashion cycle is considering how we can purposefully find new homes for our old clothes and putting forth that little more effort to do so.
Thanks for that call, Andrew. And Sarah, in our last minute, do you and your students, for that matter, find the challenges of doing things like upcycling and using and maybe remaking secondhand things inspiring in a creative way?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, there's something to be said about like just the creative process of taking something old and making it new and fresh again, and in a non-traditional sense. So how can it be used for art? How could it be used for home goods, right? And then also clothing. And so, you know, there's a real talent in that. And again, it's very inspiring to see how the students, you know, create the relationship with the garment and then make something new with fresh eyes with it.
Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Sarah Eichhorn is a fiber artist who focuses on sustainability and connecting with nature. She teaches at the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design, including most recently a course called The Anti-Fashion of Fashion. She joined us to talk about the growing interest in sustainable fashion.